All right, Alejandro, welcome to the dirt.
Hey, Jim. Thanks for having me here. Pretty excited to be here.
Yeah, excited to have you here, man. So tell us a little bit about who you are and what you do and why we should all lean in.
Sure, man. So I bootstrapped the business from the ground up, had an exit late last year, and now have a new CEO. So it's been quite a journey, man. So I'm happy to share my story from starting from scratch, you know, like literally with a wild idea that everybody told me that I was freaking crazy in an industry that's so old school that you wouldn't even believe it. And yeah, man, I'm happy to share the story and share my experiences so that other people can, you know, perhaps get inspired, learn some things, and kind of like go at it and stop listening to the naysayers, because there's plenty of those around.
Yeah, there are. So let's just start off with, you know, what business did you build, and then talk us through a couple milestones on the way to today.
Sure, man. So I was working, early 2000s, 2001, in this import operation in Miami, Florida, flower operation. And, we were using this old school software, DOS-based software and stuff like that. And, you know, I've been a techie all my life. I've been, again, techie, very curious and stuff. And I got involved in that business and kind of like learned the ropes about the business. I was running, I was running the IT, and then I got involved in running the purchasing. And I worked with, you know, hand in hand with one of the owners of the company, the president of the business. And, you know, he really taught me like a lot of stuff. And then from there, basically, this idea popped up. So like, hey, man, what about instead of having like this old DOS-based system, what if we built a web-based system? You know, I kind of like stumbled upon Salesforce like 2005, and I fell in love with Salesforce, you know, because again, I tried buying another CRM, like Microsoft CRM, and it costed like 150 grand, and you have to have like your own server and all these different things. And suddenly with Salesforce, or I don't know, man, $80 a month, I'd have access to this phenomenal tool where I could track my opportunities, yada, yada, yada. So suddenly I was like, hey, man, what if I built something for the flower industry that's web-based, that kind of like, you know, solves all the issues that I kind of like dealt with but when I was working in this company. And that's kind of like how I got started. You know, it's a wild idea. In an industry where I would visit people and saying, hey, we have a web-based platform. This is like 2010. So people will go like, web-based? You know, what do you mean web-based? Like, no. The cloud? What do you mean the cloud? No. We, you know, I have my server under my desk, and that's safety. And I was like, what are you talking about? So that was kind of like the gist of it, you know, starting from scratch, you know, building a platform. Our platform, what it does is that it vertically integrates the floral supply chain, everything from growers, importers, wholesalers, and retailers. That's kind of like what we do. And then we manage everything from sales, purchases, e-commerce, warehouse management, you know, AR, credit card processing, APIs, all that stuff. Pretty complete.
So I know you were a founder, you were a CEO, you are now out of the business successfully, having sold and handed the reins off. Talk me through a couple of those, or just pick one of those and dial in on, you know, what that emotional journey was like in doing that.
Well, it's, it's like, I have some friends that have kind of like got on their own. And what I tell them, it's like, it's a lifestyle. You know, when you start on your own and you go and you build your business, it's a lifestyle. It's not about building a business. A lot of people go like, oh, I'm going to go on my own because I want to golf every day in the afternoon. It's like, no, man, you know, you're getting in the wrong, you know, that's right. The wrong conception. And people learn quickly that when you get in this business,
field,
you know,
not the easiest field.
Yeah, man. It's like, you know, to me, like getting started, it was like 90 hour weeks were the norm. That's kind of like the only way that you need to do it, because it's a grind. You know, you're doing the sales, you're doing the product, you know, you're taking over the specs, you're running, you know, you're doing AR, you're managing the team, you're inspiring people and doing all that stuff with no money. So all the time, it's like everything is against you. So think about it. Envision this, man. It's like, I want to cross the Atlantic. I want to go from, you know, from Miami over to Portugal. And you start in this small boat, you know, with a small, tiny sail. And the boat, you know, has holes, you know. And so not only is it a small sail and it's a small boat, but you're taking in water. And you got to, you know, you got to navigate that boat through storms, you know, taking in water with a small sail. And then you start adding more people, but then they're not the most functional people. And then you embark on the journey and you realize like, hey, man, I've never sailed before. So how does that actually work? And then a hurricane comes around and it's like, hey man, not only I don't know how to sail, but there's a hurricane, and how the hell do you deal with this hurricane? Not only with the hurricane, I mean, so it's crazy, man. But so from the emotional part, it's a roller coaster, you know, that let me put it that way. But on the flip side, you kind of like learn to manage your emotions. That's one of the most cool things, you know. That's, you got to keep your cool. You learn that it's not about, you know, it's you can't take problems, you know, in a personal way. You got to learn to cope with the problems, because you know what, man, problems, they're frequent, they're constant, they're free, and they're coming at you from different angles. So anyway, so in a short story, like you said, I started the business, bootstrapped the business. Took us a while to get, you know, to find our product market fit. And once we found our product market fit, you know, we started to pound really, really hard. And that means, you know, visiting customers. I mean, visiting 100 companies, maybe one signs up. And it's like, and again, making those sales. Like, hey, man, I call, hey, Jim, listen, I have this platform, yada, yada. Oh, Alejandro, so how many customers do you have? Well, if you sign up, 2. That's like really hard. And then as the business progresses, then you also need to evolve, because when you're a small team, 5 people, 10 people, not a big deal. You're talking with every single person. You get to 20 people, suddenly you realize you don't have the opportunity to talk to every single person every single day. So then you start developing culture. Like I was a non-culture believer. To me, it was like, what culture? Like, forget about that stuff. That's something that consultants, you know, come by to sell you. And who cares about culture? Except that as you go to from 20 to 30 to 50 to 100, you realize that unless you have a, you know, culture, and you know, how do you define culture? To me, culture, the most basic definition is how people behave when you're not around. That's to me defines the company culture. And then you realize that it's like, okay, great. So you have this culture. And then in my case, I had an exit, you know, late last year. And then when I had the exit, my new partner, a private equity, a growth equity firm in New York, you know, one of the founders asked me one day casually, you know, when we were doing the due diligence, he was like, hey, Alejandro, how would you feel if we brought in like an external CEO? Of all the things that I had thought about, that question had never popped my mind. And what I did at that moment, that I paused the world, and I went into my back, you know, my back room, my private room, and I kind of like grew on the board, and I said, hey, man, this is actually a great idea. Like, man, somebody that's actually done this before, that scaled, you know, suddenly my small boat in the middle of the ocean, you know, became this bigger oil tanker. And it's like, I'm not a captain. So it's like, why not bring in somebody that's more seasoned, that can actually navigate the you know, the oil tanker across, you know, the, I don't know, man, a small strait, you know, or the Suez Canal or something like that. And that's exactly what I did. So the challenge there is like, how do you let go? And I'll give you what I think it's, for me, my best analogy. Having a role, a title, like say CEO, is like having a uniform. If you let that uniform become so entrenched with you, when somebody else comes along and says, hey, I'm going to take over that uniform, and you start taking off the uniform, that uniform, it's stuck to your skin. So as you take it off, it's ripping off your skin. It's going to be painful, and you're going to have scars. And not only that, but once you take it off, you're going to be naked, and you're going to be all scarred, and it's going to be brutal. In my case, you know, I'm the person, and my title is something that's temporary. So when our new CEO came in, you know what I did? Not only did I take off my uniform and wore like a white robe, but I went to the CEO and said, hey, man, here's the uniform. Let me make sure that it fits perfectly. And by the way, if you go here, it's got like the secret pocket. And if you, you know, tighten it here, whatever, man. And I passed it on to him. And boom, just like that, man. I gave him the keys. Life goes on. And it's been freaking phenomenal. It's kind of weird because I went from getting, I don't know, 200, 300 emails a day, Slack messages, whatever. And then the next week I would get like, I don't know, man, 5 emails a day, maybe 10. And of those 10, yeah, 5 or 7 were like CCs, not even, you know. So it's kind of like a weird feeling, but it's also phenomenal, dude. It's been one of the best, it's been one of the most gratifying experiences that I've had in my life.
Were there any points of difficulty for you in terms of actually being able to hand over the reins?
Not really, man. I mean, again, I'm a pragmatist, and it's like, to me, I'm always, think about it this way, man. It's like, I'm always looking forward. And the best analogy that I can give you is, if you're driving your car, you know, on the highway, and you're doing 100 miles an hour, where do you spend 99.9% of your time? Looking forward. Every now and then, 0.1%, you take a peek at the rear view mirror and you look towards the back. But if you're constantly driving, looking on the rear view mirror, guess what, man? You're going to crash really fast. So from my perspective, like I said, I'm a pragmatist, and I love change. And I don't like change like a little bit. No. I like change like that. Like, hey, I'm the CEO, and suddenly a new person comes in and is like, here are the keys. So yeah, man, from my perspective, no challenges. The only fear that I had was like, what am I going to do? I mean, I'm still involved in the business on a more strategic level, but it's like, I like my tools. You know, I'm a techie. So I like, you know, using Intacct, our ERP, and Salesforce, and Workato, and all these. We have like 80 different software packages that we use on a day-to-day basis. And I used to have a lot of fun with those. And I was like, hey, man, what am I going to do? But then once I kind of like let go, it's like, you know what? The world is such a big place. There's so many things that you can explore that I've had. I actually don't have enough hours in the day, not only to think about the future of the business and, you know, ideas and all that stuff, but also learning about all these things that are out there, man. It's just, the world is just a magical place.
So how did that transition shape your own personal growth?
Yeah, man, it was interesting because, again, it's like, I think that the biggest lesson is learning to let go. It's like one day you're doing something and then suddenly it's like, again, learning to let go. And to me, it's like the way that I see it, man, it's like, you know, every single human being has like a backpack. And the more stuff you put in the backpack, the heavier it's going to be. So it's like, so suddenly you realize that why am I going to carry all this stuff if I'm going to be moving around? Having a heavy backpack makes no freaking sense. So following that, you know, train of thought, what I realized is kind of like, sure, it's like you get things, you put in the backpack, but on a daily basis, I open the backpack and I say, well, do I need this? Not really. Boof, throw it out. You still remember the stuff, you have the memories, but you know what? It doesn't have any weight on you. So that makes you free. And when you're free, you can go out there, you can explore, your mind can wander to new places. You never, it's like my family asked me, like my dad goes like, hey, so I'm sure that you have like a tiny bit, you know, you must have some regrets about not being the CEO. I was like, no, I don't have any. He goes like, you have to have a little something. It's like, no, I don't have any. If anything, I have gratefulness and I have excitement about, you know, what the future is bringing in now that we have a new CEO. He's putting together like a new team and bringing in, you know, better players, you know, with more experience and all that stuff. That's the way that I see it. And when you look at it from that perspective, then it's easy because you're not attached. You know, I'm very detached to stuff. Attachment is equals pain. Why have the pain just to being attached? Doesn't make sense, at least to me.
So how did you go about identifying the right CEO replacement?
Yeah, so the my new partner, they were the ones that actually did the whole, you know, the whole search. And it was actually a funny story. Our CFO, we have the guy that I made a transaction with, one day he called me and said, hey man, I want to become, you know, the company CFO. And I was like, yeah, perfect. That would be phenomenal. And then his brother was in a trade show in Miami and met a guy and said, hey, you know, we were recruiting. We had interviewed, you know, like two candidates. And then suddenly this guy popped out of the blue. I remember it was Easter. I came back from a trip, had a meeting in the afternoon, and we just connected, you know, for an hour, and the hour turned like 2 hours and change. And I was like, hey man, like this is, I'm a gut, you know, gut feeling person. You know, to me, it's all about, you know, it's like, again, like the PE group had made, you know, the kind of like the diligence, the background check, making sure all the stuff. To me, it was more like, is this a person that I can, you know, hand over the keys and I'm going to feel comfortable that this person is going to be doing the right stuff. The right stuff doesn't mean that they're going to keep doing things the same way. Obviously, they're going to change stuff. And that's the whole point. You know, if not, we wouldn't be getting a new CEO. But as soon as I felt like he was like the right person, it was like, to me, it was like, that was the green light, man. And it was like, hey man, I'm game. And 2 weeks later, boom, he was taking over. It was that fast.
How many people did you meet with during the process?
I just met with two people.
Oh, really?
Two candidates.
Took care of everything until you got to the two people. Huh. Do you know how many they talked to?
I don't know, man, but it was probably five or six, I guess. Probably more. Okay.
And you got the feeling when meeting the one that this was the right guy.
Yeah, what? Man. I mean, it's like we hit it off. Like I said, we had scheduled a meeting for an hour, and then suddenly the hour turned to 2 hours and change. And it's like, it was like we were like so connected. And suddenly you start talking to somebody and you realize that it's like, and forget about like the business portion of it. It's like, it's more like the philosophical aspects. You know, what do you value? What do you think that are the important things in life? You know, like let me put it this way. It's a top human being. And to me, it's like, to me, I like to hang out with people or get involved with people that I think that are top quality human beings. The rest of the stuff, think about it. You know, you have all these things and, you know, it's a pyramid. People are pyramids, right? The skill sets, that's the top of the pyramid. That's easy, man. You go, you take a course, you learn something, whatever. But the base of the pyramid, if the base is not right, you can't really change the base of a pyramid. It's really hard. You know, it's like, imagine, man. You have you have a life, you know, built on top of the base. If the base is the wrong base, and I'm not saying that it's the wrong base. I mean, there's just different bases. You know, it's got to be a base that's kind of like aligned with your personal philosophies, with your personal values, all those things. As soon as we kind of like hit it off, I was like, this is the guy, this is the person, and boom, here we go.
So that brings up another thought, because you mentioned culture earlier, right? You mentioned this importance of culture and how you didn't really fully get it, and then you got it. And and how it just took, you know, growing and adding more people to really, you know, kick in. How have you been able to foster a culture on more of this human side of business that you value so much?
Yeah, man. I mean, like I said, it's like I'm an avid reader. I've read a lot of books, and it's helped a lot. And one of the books that I read was The Hard Thing About Hard Things from Ben Horowitz. And, you know, one of the things that he said in the book was pretty basic, you know, people, product, profits. You take care of your people, then they take care of your product, and then that generates profits. And it sounds pretty obvious, but most companies do it the other way around. It's like, you know, first we got to make profits. And then if we make money, then we invest it on the product. And then if we have something left over, then we invest it on the people. And I think that it's kind of like backwards. So, you know, number one, team, you know, fairly, you know, more than fair, as much as you can. That's critical. And then number two, having an environment where people are working towards a purpose, where people are, you know, where people enjoy going to work. To me, the acid test is on a Sunday, you know, you hang out with a bunch of people and it's like, suddenly you're going to bump into somebody that says like, oh man, what a drag. Why? Well, tomorrow's Monday. I got to go to the office. Like, oh my God, I want to shoot myself in the head. It's like, oh my God, you know, you should change jobs. I mean, if you focus on having a team where on a Sunday, instead of thinking like, oh, what a drag, I got to go tomorrow to work. If instead you have a team where it says like, hey man, tomorrow I got to go to the office and I'm excited because we're doing stuff and we're changing, you know, our small piece of the world. That's what makes a difference, dude. And then you can do all these things. I mean, it's not only about having perks, but it's about having a purpose. You know, sure, people love perks and you want to have all these different things that people enjoy. And it's also listening to people. I mean, every company, every team is different. You know, not only the teams, but the culture. You know, we have people in the States, in Mexico, in Venezuela, in Colombia. And you have to kind of like understand what drives people. And that happens when you connect with people and you connect with people on a human to human level. So that's what I used to do a lot, you know, just talking to people, just having like one-on-ones, like, hey, what's up? You know, hey, how are you doing? You know, how can I help you? What things can we work on? What ideas do you have? And then people, you'd be surprised how many ideas people kind of like throw out. Oh, you know what? It would be great if we had a guitar in the office. And you go like, really? Oh yeah. You know, did you know that five of us play guitar? Like, I have no freaking idea. So you go and you get two, three guitars, and then suddenly there are guitars in the office. And then it's like, I would do like little experiments when we had the office before COVID. I would buy like a little badminton course and put it there, and nobody had played badminton. And suddenly the next day there was a badminton court in the middle of the office. And suddenly there was like this board and they had like tournaments and people would have like tournaments in the office. So again, it's working hard, but it's also having fun. You know, to me, fun is a critical component of success.
Yeah. And those are some real good examples. I'm curious, as you sold off first, you know, minority, the majority stake in the business, how did that affect culture?
Yeah, people freaked out. You know, it's normal. It's like, oh my God, like what's going to happen? It's like, they're going to come in and change everything. But again, that's why you got to connect with the right person. So suddenly Chris came around, you know, Chris Fields, you know, and he came around and it's like, hey, you know, I'm not, you know, of course we've made some changes and it's obvious that we're going to change. And somebody one day called to me and said, hey, you know, it's like, I'm not sure I like this. There's all these changes that are happening. It's like, well, what do you expect? You know, it's like, we're not going to bring in like a top-notch CEO so that he does the exact same thing that I was doing. You know, if that was the case, I would have, you know, we would have saved that money and I would be here. So of course there's change, but if the person that comes in is mindful of the culture of the business and you start making small changes, like think about it this way, you go into your house, right? And suddenly you have a piece of furniture, I don't know, man, in your living room. And envision this, if one day you come in and your wife had moved everything around, you'd probably freak out. Like, oh my God, what are you doing? Like, this is so different, whatever. But if your wife was like, you know what, every day I'm going to move everything, you know, an inch to the left. And little by little, she starts rotating stuff. Suddenly you realize like, hey, wasn't this sofa over here, you know, like a month ago? And your wife is just going to smirk. She's like, yeah, but you know, I moved it an inch a day and you didn't even notice. So culture, you know, plus culture evolves as the company evolves. So again, I actually think that it's a mistake when a company says, oh, this is our culture and is written on stone. I don't believe in anything being written on stone. The world is a magical place that is changing, you know, billions of times per second. Why would you expect things to stay the same? That's actually, that is counter to progress. That's the way that I see it. So change is good. Yep.
And when you say written in stone, what do you mean by that? Like, do you mean having a mission, vision, and values and things that are written down and shared and hired against and fired against, or do you mean something that's just completely unmovable?
Well, it's actually both. I mean, there are certain things that are just simply unmovable that again, like you have to have good human beings. I mean, you can't hire, oh, you know, Jim's a top dog, but just, he's just an asshole, you know, but he's a really great guy. I mean, he's a really great professional in doing whatever he's doing, you know, pass. You know, I'd rather have somebody that's not like, you know, like you, like superstar, but having somebody that's a team player. So there are certain things that they're kind of like, again, when I say they're not written on stone is because the world changes very fast, and COVID was a great example. You know, like so we had a huge office. I don't know, man. Like, what was it, man? Like 9,000 square foot office. You know, kind of like open space, all that stuff. And from one day to another, it was like, hey, we gotta go home. It's only gonna be temporary. It's probably gonna be for 2 weeks, 3 weeks. We never went back. That's what I mean when the world changes. So if you have all these things written on stone, it's like it's gonna be a chaos. But if you say like, hey, we used to do things this way, but now that we're working all remote. Suddenly, we need to change all these things. And that involves the culture. Like, how do you make sure that people are mingling with each other when there's no water cooler because everybody's working remote? How do you get people to connect? How do you foster those connections between when a new team member arrives? How do you make sure that the new team member is greeted? You know, how do you make sure that other people, you know the new team member and they get to experience, you know, who they are and all those things? So again, it's like we switched over to video. So we bought Vimeo. Vimeo.com, they have like an enterprise plan because we were thinking, how do we share video securely, privately, so that they're not, you know, kind of like floating around. And we found that. So when a new hire came in, it's like part of our onboarding process, like, hey, record a 90-second video or a 2-minute video of who you are, what you like, what you do, why you're here, whatever. So suddenly a new person comes in, it's posted on our Confluence, on our internal, you know, wiki. And it's like, hey, you know, welcome Jim. And Jim goes out. And then on the comments, you know, like everybody goes in, like, hey, Jim, I noticed that you like playing the piano. I also like piano. Or I noticed that you like, you know, I don't know, man, electronic music concerts. You know, by the way, we're going, whatever, man. So it's like suddenly you just joined the company remotely, but it's like you feel like you're welcome. So it's like you join a company and then on Slack. Like, so again, multiple things. And it's experimentation. You know, so again, if you're set on stone, like, oh, when a new hire comes in, you got to do this. Well, what happens when the world changes like COVID? So that's what I mean, like not having things written on stone, just being able to flip on a dime. And if the world changes, you better change with it, like quickly, pronto.
Yeah, in the software business, you know, employee retention, talent management, obviously pretty important topics a lot of people are talking about right now and have been. And given the challenge of retaining highly skilled devs, you know, what are some of the approaches that Comet uses to attract and retain top talent?
Yeah, man. So I think that semantics is important, and I don't use the word retention because retention implies having golden handcuffs. So it's like, who wants to be? I mean, that's me. Like, I don't want to be retained. I'd rather be. We use the word persuasion. How can I persuade our team members to stick around? Because persuasion is a word like retaining people. Like, you might pay somebody like, you know, top dollars. And they're going to stick around because of the top dollars. But you know what? When they're talking to their friends, they're talking about, oh, you know what? I have a golden handcuff. It's like, I'd like to go, but they pay me so well that I don't want to leave. And we try to kind of like approach it from the different side. Like, what's our purpose? And like, hey, you know, we're building this platform that is transforming the flower industry. And it's like, you share stories. I go to a trade show and suddenly, you know, you bump into somebody and somebody says like, listen, I just wanted to personally thank you because of what you guys have built. I've been able to build my business, and I started with 2 people and now we're 20 and I'm doing all these things and I'm growing, boom, boom, boom. And then you go back to the team and you share with the team like, hey, this is what's happening. Like, you know, what we're building is creating these opportunities for all these companies, and all these things are taking place because of what we're building. So suddenly people realize that what you're building, it's not only you're going there, you know, just to earn your paycheck, but you're building something that's impacting in a positive way other people's lives. And I think that when most people get that, you reach this inflection point, and it's like when most people are aligned with that concept and when most people believe in what you're doing, but people want to stick around. That's it, man. It's natural. Now, don't get me wrong. You know, having people leave, it's also healthy for the business, because when people leave, sometimes when people stick around for way too long, they become really empowered and they become, I don't know, man, it's kind of weird. They get this like this godly mentality that, oh, you know, I've been around so long that I'm like, you know, I'm like the master. And it's like, no, man, you know, like everybody's expendable in a good way. And then when new people come around, you know what? They come around with new ideas. They come around with, you know, hey, where I used to come from, we used to do things like this, and they start questioning stuff. And that's what we encourage people when they join the business. Like, hey, you know what? If you see something that you feel that could be done better, you know, raise your hand. Say, hey, listen, you know, where I come from, we used to do A instead of B, or we used to do C instead of D. And you know what? We're open to change. Like I said, man, change is great, man. And somebody comes in with a new idea, it doesn't matter that it's the new gal or the new guy. As long as the idea makes sense, why not, man? I mean, that's the whole point of bringing in new people, so that you can actually keep change. So I think that there's a healthy balance. Now, if you tell me, like, oh, you know what? Our rotation is 85%. I'm going to go like, hey, man, that doesn't sound like a healthy environment. Like, when 85% of your team is leaving, you know, on a yearly basis, that kind of sucks. But I think that when 5%, 10%, maybe 15% is rotating, that's pretty healthy, man. You know, new people, new brains, new mindsets, new way of looking at the world. That's the beauty of it.
What are a couple of the biggest changes that you've seen over the last couple of years in the way that the way that you were doing things versus the way that, you know, new CEOs doing things?
Well, I'll tell you, like, the most controversial and impactful change is, like, we used to have a 4-day week, and we had it, I don't know, for a couple of years. And the new CEO comes around and says, like, listen, man, you know, it's like, we have all these things. We have this, you know, we have a big mission to accomplish. And I just don't see how that's going to happen. You know, well, he didn't tell me like that. He started like, well, you know, it's like, we got all these things to do. And I picked up right away. I was like, hey, man, you're talking about the 4-day week. And if we need to get rid of that, sure, let's do it. And is it going to ruffle some feathers? Absolutely, man. But you know what? Here's the deal. If we have people that are here for the lifestyle, because they only want to be with the company because we have a 4-day week, and that's the most important thing, those people should not be part of our team. That's it. Because again, if you're not focused on the purpose, on what we're trying to build, on the value that we're trying to create to our customers and to our customers' customers, you're in the wrong place. That's it. And that happened. That happened about a month ago. We announced it. And of course, man, some people are kind of like, some people were like, well, you know, I prefer to have the 4-day week. Sure, man. But you know what? You know how many people have quit up to this moment? Nobody. Now, will some people quit? Absolutely. But then again, man, it's healthy for some people to quit, because if somebody, think about it this way, man, shaking the tree. If you take a tree and it's full of fruits, right? And you shake it really, really hard, the fruits that are ready to fall down, they're going to fall down. And the fruits that are not, they're going to stick around in the tree, no matter how hard you shake it.
Yeah, no, it's amen to that. Well, what has you the most excited about going into the next year?
Dude, the vision, man. It's like, now, again, we have a new VP of product. We have a new VP of revenue, and people that have come from other companies. Our VP of product is an Argentinian guy that lives in Uruguay, in Montevideo. And our VP of revenue is a Mexican guy that lives in Mexico City. And they both come from larger companies that have really, really scaled and have done all these things. So now it's like, we're looking at what we have, and it's like, they're coming around saying, hey, and even Chris, you know, he comes from Weedmaps. You know, he used to be the CEO of Weedmaps, and he, you know, he grew that company pretty big. So they come around and they go like, hey, man, you know, why is the online participation so low? Like, how come our customers are not doing more stuff online? And suddenly it's like, hey, like, you know, Chris's vision is like, every order should be an online order. And, you know, there's all these different, you know, I'm not going to get into the nuances of the flower industry, but there's all these different types of orders. And suddenly the vision is, how do we convert all that business online? And how do we go from, well, the flower industry was less digital. Then COVID came around, then it became super digital. But now the vision for next year is, how do we go full digital? You know, so that's what gets me most excited, because it's like, think about it this way, man. All these things that I've been working on for the last decade plus, like ideas, it's like, the way that I see it is like, I planted all these seeds. I planted some of those seeds in some trees, and some of those trees are starting to grow. But then you have some expert gardeners coming in saying, hey, man, you're doing it wrong. You know, for this tree to grow really, really fast, you got to trim it every other week, and you got to trim it like an inch from the side and on the top, whatever. And suddenly I'm there and it's like, hey, man, go for it, dude. Because at the end of the day, why not, dude? It's like, me as a minority shareholder, all I want to see is the company grow, the company flourish, and then the team members flourish. The team members are excited because they get the opportunity to work with people that have like a completely different level, much, much higher. So that's a great opportunity, because you know what, man? You can actually watch them, and you can work with them, and you can learn. And if you do that, every single person in the company has the best opportunity in their lifetime to grow, not a little bit, but exponentially. That's the beauty of it.
All right. So I was saying, To tie the show off, we always end with what we call the Founder Five, which is five quick hit questions about you and your growth. So a couple of them you already touched on. It's probably going to be pretty easy. So the first one, the number one metric or KPI that you are relentlessly focused on?
MRR, monthly recurring revenue.
Nice. Top tip for growth stage founders like yourself?
Find a mentor. I never had a mentor. You know, join a group like Vistage. I joined Vistage 6 years ago. And, you know, Vistage is a peer CEO group. And we, you know, I actually commute, you know, I'm living in Medellin, Colombia. I mean, back and forth, but I commute to Fort Lauderdale, actually to Boca Raton, north of Miami, every month, man, to go to my Vistage meeting and meet with my 14 peer CEOs. And again, learn from their experiences and hear their challenges and, you know, learn to be vulnerable and stuff like that. So get a mentor. It took me a decade to figure out to having a mentor. And now when I look back, if I could do one thing different, is when I started, I would have found a mentor, somebody that I kind of like admired and called him up and said, like, hey, Jim, listen, man, I really admire what you do. And, you know, can you take me under your wing? Can I call you every now and then just to ask you questions and so you can provide some guidance? That would have saved me freaking, I don't know, man, like so many things. But so, yeah, find a mentor.
Yeah, no, that's a good one. Favorite book or podcast that's helped you to grow as a founder?
Oof, man, that's a toughie, man, because I've read so many freaking books. But one of the best books that I think, man, it's called Influence from Robert Cialdini. It's a psychology book, but it's phenomenal because when you're the CEO, I mean, you're kind of like, you know, you're a psychologist, you're a mentor, you're a friend, it's all these different things. And just understanding more about other human beings and how the human psyche works and stuff like that, that becomes really, really handy. So yeah, Influence by Robert Cialdini. That's top notch book.
All right. Piece of advice that counters traditional wisdom.
Yeah, man. Don't listen to the naysayers. Everybody's going to tell you like, oh, no, that's not going to happen. Oh, no, that's not how I do it. Oh, no, no, no. I tried that once and it didn't work. Oh, no, no. You're going down the wrong path. Don't listen to people. Only what I do is only relate to people that amplify what you're doing. And by amplifying, I don't mean that they have to agree with what you're doing. You need to learn to listen and stuff like that. But there's a lot of naysayers around. Most people, think about it this way. You have the standard Bell distribution, right? And normally, you know, the majority, the average is in the middle. That's where the big Bell is. That Bell tries to, you know, everybody's going to try to pull you into the middle because that's just human nature. Oh, we want you to be kind of like average. So forget about, you know, don't talk to average people. Talk to people that are not average. Talk to the crazy people. Talk to the people that have done things that people thought that it were impossible. Talk to people that have gone on their own path. That's my advice, man. Don't, you know, everybody's going to give you advice. If you get an unsolicited advice, it comes in this way, it goes out there that way, you know, boom, simple as that.
Awesome. All right. Last one. What is going to be the title of your autobiography?
Oof, man. What's going to be the title of my autobiography? You know, like in my case, it's like follow your dreams. That would be my autobiography would be follow your dreams. That's it.
Yeah, I like it. All right. You've given a ton to our listeners today, Alejandro. So time for a little bit of self-promotion. How can those listening help you out?
No, man. I mean, it's like, honestly, dude, it's more about paying it forward. To me, it's more, how can I help, you know, some of your listeners? If somebody wants to reach out to me, they want to have a little chat, they want to just, you know, drop random questions. I'm more about that. You know, I'm not really, I've never been a big believer in self-promoting, you know, what we do and what I do and stuff. So now I'm at a point in my life where the biggest enjoyment that I get of my day to day is when I have somebody that reaches out, you know, I don't know, we posted on YouTube and somebody reaches out saying like, hey man, can I reach out to you to ask you a question? I was like, yes. Absolutely. And somebody called me and I got a guy that called me a couple of weeks ago. And after a podcast that I recorded, you know, another podcast, and he goes like, hey, you know, calls me and say, hey, so I have this business and I'm trying to do all these things. And we went for breakfast and it was like, suddenly he called me like the next week. I was like, hey man, after our chat, I decided to forgo all these different things and focus on all these things because boom, boom, boom. That's freaking awesome, dude. So again, to me, it's all about paying it forward.
What is the best way for listeners to get in touch with you?
I guess Twitter. You know, I discovered Twitter. I never really used it, and I started using it 6 months ago. I'm there. I'm pretty active. So yeah, my handle is at Perez Linaza, like my two last names. That's it. That's probably the best way to get hold of me. And yeah, man.